They live it. They love it. These guys are crazy about hockey. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, exclusively on Sports Radio 1290.
With apologies to Jim Rome, who can be heard weekdays from 11 to 2 here on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That, of course, is Romy's theme music. So we're going to co-opt it a little bit here for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
ESPN has Romy. We have Remy.
Actually, ESPN doesn't have Rome.
They have him for a TV show, but not for
it's
radio.
Premier Radio Networks has him for radio.
Well, Premier has Romy. We have Remy.
Remy is in the other room doing the cover with live chat. You can join along with Remus/Remy at www.illegalcurve.com. You can also send us your tweets at Illegal Curve or send us an email, drew@illegalcurve.com, and on Facebook, illegalcurve.com. So you can see, you can really get a hold of us any which way. And of course, you know, Ezzy responds to all his fans clamoring at his front door on Waverly.
I still get the old-fashioned fan snail mail.
Do you?
Lots of postcards.
I assume you have security to go through it, make sure you know some of it, the letter bombs aren't included in
there. I have my dad that does that.
Who's
for
a
me.
Math professor?
Yeah, he's a math professor. I'm not sure if we've covered that enough on the show.
Dad,
lately.
I made sure we shouted you out. So, Dad, I know you're listening. So, hope the coffee's brewing, and I'll be home in a couple of hours.
He's changed the locks on you. Anyways, let's cover the Coyotes lease agreement, the agreement that Matthew Hulsizer, the rumored future new owner of the Coyotes.
Hulsizer after this deal.
That's a good line, Richie.
Well, Hulsizer, the last name Hulsizer, it seems like that could be like a finishing move than WWE. He's about to give him the Hulsizer.
Well, I'll tell you what, he's giving the Hulsizer to the taxpayers of the city of Glendale. Mm-hmm. This is the most absurd agreement. Please, if you're a taxpayer in the city of Glendale...
You know what? Take the time, Drew. There's a ton of points here. I want you to go over one by one, and then we'll talk about them after. Let's go over every single one.
Okay. We'll start with that. The city is... Well, let's start here. The city of Glendale is paying Matthew Hulsizer $97 million over the next 5.5 years to manage the arena.
It's a good wage.
Okay, $97 million to manage the arena. The city is paying Matthew Hulsizer $100 million... and I say it completely like Dr. Evil on purpose, to purchase the 5,500 parking spaces in front of the arena.
There's a recession in Arizona in the U.S., right?
Yeah.
Okay, keep going.
I just want to make sure the economy
isn't doing well by any means.
No. $100 million for 5,500 parking spaces.
Yeah.
And, of course, it bears the question, if nobody's going to the game and the parking spaces aren't being used, what revenue are you generating from those parking spaces?
Fair enough.
At the end of the lease... So the lease ends in the next 23 years from now. So at the end of the lease, 23 years from now, the Hulsizer can purchase the arena for $40 million. Okay.
Yep.
You know, that's fine. There's no way in, no chance, by the way, that Matthew Hulsizer owns this team 23 years from now. Matthew Hulsizer has to pay rent of $6 million a year.
Wow.
Okay, so, really a drop in the bucket. Compared to what the city of Glendale is giving up.
New York apartment. He's got $6 million a year in rent for a massive arena in Glendale.
Yeah. Okay. Here's the big one, as far as I can tell. This is really the big concession that the city of Glendale got from him, is that the team is going to be renamed the Arizona Coyotes.
Oh, really?
Because they're going to be flocking to the arena from Tempe and from Flagstaff.
Yeah.
They're just going to be... Because now that the Arizona Coyotes, they're just going to come in droves.
Drew, don't forget about Tucson.
Yes. Because, the Phoenix Suns really don't get some fans to watch them because they're named the Phoenix Suns. They don't want to watch Steven Nash because they're the Phoenix Suns. They would only come if they're named the Arizona Suns.
Yeah, the Tempe fans are holding up their nose because I would never go watch the Phoenix Suns.
Right.
This is the most absurd.
Any more points, or that's...
That's the basic.
Okay, now, I want Ezzy to provide a quote from Ken Campbell. Ken Campbell writes for the Hockey News, a very established writer. He had a really great quote about the sustainability of hockey in Phoenix. And, Ezzy, why don't you read that quote from the article?
This is great. I mean, because, we're on the topic, and I was reading this to Rich, and this is great, okay? The argument has been made by many in the U.S. that the reason why the Coyotes aren't drawing very many fans this year and last year is because of the ownership situation. Fans don't know that there's an owner. There is no owner.
So let's hear what Campbell
and fans
say.
Don't know what's going to happen, okay?
Let's
so this is Ken Campbell's quote. And this is his argument against why this isn't a valid point. So quote Ken Campbell. I would argue that with the following scenario. You're a family of four, and you're looking for something exciting to do on a Friday night. The Coyotes are playing at the Jobbing.com arena, and you've heard a lot about this dynamic young group of players. The team is doing well. Tickets are reasonably priced, and there's the prospect of lots of gratuitous violence. But then you whack your forehead, turn to your wife, and say, "We can't go to the game tonight, honey. The team doesn't have an owner, for goodness sake."
Absolutely right. The owners, it's a red herring completely. People
don't
care.
Isn't that well put?
Yeah, of course it's
very well put.
It's a complete red herring. Oh, once we have stable ownership, fans will come out in droves.
So now we know that Matthew Hullsizer is the owner, doesn't that mean that the Arizona Coyotes are going to average 18,000 fans a game now?
I actually hear there's already a waiting list for season tickets coming up.
Yeah,
you know. Here's what Glendale Councilman Phil Lieberman had to say about the deal. Now, keep in mind, Glendale Councilor Phil
Qualify
Lieberman.
Qualify that, Drew.
Yes. Is
there
the
any relation to
who,
Joe Lieberman or no?
No, I don't think so. He's the same city. He's about, you know, he's about 100 years old. He's the same councillor who last time they had this sort of, you know, the $25 million issue came before his city council in Glendale, said, "No way am I supporting this. There's no chance I'm supporting this." And then because of the words of a six-year-old, changed his mind to really hose the taxpayers of Glendale.
Little Timmy came in Jersey and he said, "I want to watch the Coyotes play." Like, this literally happened. It's no joke. And he changed his vote because little Timmy, you know, let's vote on let's vote with our hearts here and the taxpayers' money.
Well, guys, it just came out. WikiLeaks just released something, and it said that kid actually just bought that jersey that day, and he's not a hockey fan. That
interesting.
You can see that on WikiLeaks.
Okay. Anyways, Councilman Phil Lieberman blasted the deal as ridiculous Friday night. He said Glendale cannot afford the terms of the agreement. No kidding. No kidding. You can't afford to pay $200 million to a guy. I mean, I would buy this team under these terms of agreement. You know what? This is a great deal for Matthew Hullsizer.
If you have $300 million, and that's a heck of a lot of money, if you have $300 million, you really can't afford to buy a team for, you know, $200 million. You can't put all your money in this team. So basically, he's putting no money in.
Yeah.
And obviously, the city's putting all the money in, and Lieberman has noticed this. Well, what a great job. What a great job by Phil Lieberman to realize that the city's giving them a deal that he could never say no to. Well,
Mayor Elaine Scruggs has said the city would suffer if the team left. What shall we do? Lock it up, turn off the lights, and then pay the debt on the arena? She asked this week at a community meeting.
Okay, and
That's exactly what you should do if it's cheaper than $200 million.
Exactly. I want to respond to her question with another question. What shall we do? Keep playing in an arena? You know, dump in $100 million and allow an owner to continue losing money? Oh, hold on a second. He's not going to lose money because we're giving him $100 million. That is the alternative.
It's an absolutely outstanding deal for Matthew Hullsizer. I mean, words actually
can't do it. Terrible deal for the city of Glendale.
I'll tell you, there's going to be a council meeting Tuesday night.
And they're going to approve it.
I think they will approve it. But there's a couple things. There's a council meeting Tuesday night, and I'm sure that'll be broadcast in Winnipeg somewhere, because it was last time, and it was tremendously entertaining. Second of all, where is the Goldwater Institute. We haven't heard from them yet. They're the big wild card right now, because I think they have a pretty good case to go to the Arizona Supreme Court or go to court in Arizona and prevent this deal from happening. They've won before based on similar agreements, so there's no reason why they can't win again.
And, Drew, there's absolutely no reason to say that the majority of Glendale residents are against this, but there are definitely people already that are making it vocal. I mean, Phil Lieberman on council has already said that this deal is ridiculous.
I don't believe Phil Lieberman for one second. He will vote for this because that's just, I mean, he likes to get his name in the paper and then he flip-flops.
Yeah.
But this is the most absurd hosing of taxpayers that I've really blatantly seen in a long time.
Coming from a country that doesn't want to put any money into, let's not put money into healthcare. Let's put our money into the Phoenix Coyotes.
Yeah. I mean, or that billion, exactly. Don't let's not get started on that aspect. But this is an unbelievably good deal for Hullsizer, a terrible deal for the city of Glendale. And, I mean, if hockey fans in Winnipeg are lamenting and ripping out their hair, don't get carried away yet. Lots of things could still happen on this one. And, you know, everything else is still going to play itself out. It's not by any means a set in stone anything.
I just can't believe the Glendale taxpayers sit idly by and watch this. I mean, this is a lot of money here.
It's just a lot of money for a city and a community that has no money.
Glendale is a city where there's a lot of vacant houses and commercial property
it's
as well.
It's been affected immensely by the economy. This is not a wealthy to-do city with a large tax base. Mm-hmm. This is going to, people will feel this in the pocketbook. Sometimes when, you know, these deals come into effect and there's millions of people that are, you know, offsetting the cost or whatever, you don't really
notice
it.
Why are you subsidizing a millionaire? I don't get it.
Well, because
They might not have a big tax-based group, but...
It's one thing to subsidize them, but it's a whole separate thing to be subsidizing them to the point and to the extent that you're subsidizing them.
They want to limit the amount of money.
$200 million is more than it cost to build the arena in the first place.
Right.
That's amazing. I mean, this whole thing is absolutely astounding.
Right, and Glenn, and just one more thing. Glendale might not be rich in money, but they're rich in cacti.
But can we talk about just quickly analogize this with the NBA? Okay. NBA team is not succeeding. The New Orleans Hornets. David Stern goes and buys the team.
Yeah.
You watch something, it'll get done right away. It's not going to last for 18 months. That much I'll tell you.
Well, that's because they run it in a tip-top shape. I mean, this has been the most absurd. I mean, and to some extent, the bankruptcy proceedings affected that because they put it in
the relationship
court there.
Was it Edelman?
Yeah.
They letting it get to these points again. Like David Stern doesn't let these things get to that.
You're right. They step in before it becomes a public debacle.
That's
and
right.
I mean, I don't think we're at the end of this one yet. I wish we were because I'm sick of talking about it, but I don't think we are. Anyways, let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to be discussing PK Subban.
Yep.
The blood flicking incident.
Waffles.
Waffle throwing, and then we'll talk about the Islanders fans or the Nordiques fans invading the island tonight.
Oh wow.
Blood flicking. What have we come to?
This is a great.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show
so far.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 10:45 in the morning here, Saturday morning on Sports Radio 1290. Still to come, Craig Heisinger, General Manager of the Manitoba Moose. And in this segment, we're going to talk about three things I never really thought I'd talk that would group together in a hockey talk. Four things. PK Subban, blood flicking, waffle throwing, and the invasion on Long Island.
Of Quebec Nordiques fans.
Oh, got to build up the anticipation.
Boosters.
Somebody just turned on the radio, they heard invasion on Long Island. They want to know who's being invaded. Is it King Kong? Is it gigantic ants? Or is it Quebec Nordique fans?
The first two things aren't real, though.
Gigantic ants could be.
Well, if you put them under a magnifying glass, they could be big, but
and
actual giant ants don't
and
exist.
In New York, they always say you're under a magnifying glass.
Oh, Drew, well said there.
Thank you.
When in Rome.
Should we start with the most legitimate of the four things?
Sure,
PK Subban thing?
Why don't we?
PK Subban back in the lineup for the Habs last night after being benched for three games or four games?
He was three games.
Three games benching by Jacques Martin.
I'm going to touch on this a little more. I'm on six things I learned this week. But I think this is being blown out of proportion. It's really beyond my comprehension how much this is being blown out of proportion. This day and age, guys, everything's under a microscope, and we overanalyze.
Especially in New York.
And we overanalyze every move. And this is overanalyzing on this move.
Is this a rookie defenseman who may have got a little bit too big for his britches, who's getting his head back on place by a coach?
Maybe the second part of that, maybe. But maybe it's his rookie defenseman who needs to learn the game and needs to learn his craft and needs to take a step back and take a look from the press box.
He made a bad pinch, and Richie's going to talk about this later. PK Subban is by no means a veteran defenseman. He's made mistakes. He's got lots of talent.
Scatterbrained.
One of the most talented guys in the league, and I bet anybody would take him on their lineup now as a 20-year-old.
Oh, of course.
But yeah, he made a bad pinch, and that's why he sat out. I respect
and
the
a
fact,
bad pass.
You know, I know Tim is a big Habs fan. I like the Habs. We all know how good of a hockey town Montreal is, but I respect the benching for three games. Even though they lost last night, they played well. But PK Subban, he had to learn a lesson. And I don't think he was being benched for the comments he made on the ice or off the ice.
I agree.
It was because of his play on the ice. Habs are a good team this year. PK Subban's going to be a big part of it. He needs to learn from his mistakes.
From an outside, observer's perspective, which, it seems like a good move by Jacques Martin. It's not, I mean, you have a very capable player to fill in there.
Yannick Weber.
He's a capable player. He's not as good as PK Subban,
he's not awful. And Subban brings an offensive element. He's an offensive player.
Exactly. So there's a fair trade there. And I mean, Subban probably needs to take a step back, watch the game up from upstairs in the press box.
Yeah.
You know, get to see it from a different perspective. And I think you come back as a better hockey player after the fact. I mean, I just don't see. I mean, of course, it's getting blown out of proportion because that's just the way we do it in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
But, I think it just seems like a smart move by a veteran head coach, making the game a little bit easier on a young player. Then you factor in the I hate that we have to talk about it. I really don't think we even need to spend a lot of time on it. And that's the what Darren Pang said.
Yeah, and we and
it was a slip of the tongue. For those of you who missed it, Darren Pang on TSN wanted to say something along the lines of, you know, PK Subban should play the game the way St. Louis's Alex Pietrangelo does it, which is the and he meant to say the right way, but what he said was the white way. And now, of course, PK Subban is African Canadian, and so all you know, he didn't mean it in any malicious sense of the word. It was an innocent slip of the tongue.
Right.
Get off the guy's back.
Right, and we
get off
and
the
I
guy's
speak,
back.
I speak for everybody on this show, and Darren Pang, and known as Panger on TSN. We've had him on our show at least twice.
Maybe once or twice. Yeah, we have had him twice.
And great guest, and he apologized.
Yeah, he felt terrible.
And yeah, I agree with you. In this day and age of instantaneous information going around Twitter and Facebook and all that stuff, this is something that should be immediately forgotten because this is a human mistake. He's human, and he made a mistake.
It's a slip of the tongue.
Everybody on this show has, well, except for Richie, me and Drew for sure, we've made mistakes on air, and we've had to apologize. We're not going to talk about that, but
that's true. Actually.
I mean, everyone makes a human. Everyone makes a human mistake. You're right. This isn't. We're
going to
have Panger back on the show because he's a great, insightful hockey guy, and you have to just let that one go.
I couldn't stand it. I thought it was the most absurd thing. I thought it was insulting to everybody's intelligence, and it does a disservice to when actual people use racist terms.
Yeah.
Don't even begin to think of this as anything to do with racism. It was. For those who blew it out of proportion, they should be ashamed of themselves, as far as I'm concerned. I think that, PK Subban will be a better player for having sat out a couple games.
Let me talk about that in the next segment with our six things.
With our six things, we're going to talk about it more then. Moving on, the blood-flicking incident. In case you missed it, Matt Karkner of the Ottawa Senators, after a fight with Derek Boogaard of the New York Rangers.
Quickly, to his credit, before we ream him out. To his credit, nobody's able to get any draw any blood or get anything off of Derek Boogaard. And Matt Karkner is a pretty big guy, but Boogaard is a monstrous guy. He's a Saskatchewan boy. He's like 6'8". I remember I saw a wild practice once. The guy can hardly stick handle, but he's just monstrous. And nobody touches him. And he went in there. He could handle a rack, really. And Karkner nailed him with, I think it was a left, and really, really phased him. But the problem is that he acted like a complete and total immature jerk after.
I've never heard of this in the history, in hockey. Is
anywhere
as they were skating off the ice or skating to the penalty box. I mean,
the fight was by the Rangers bench.
Okay,
and
he basically
had beat Boogaard, really.
An accomplishment in itself.
And he wrestled him down. I hate the wrestling, but he wrestled Boogaard down to the end, and so he had to skate by the Rangers bench to get to the auto bench because I think it was at the end of a period. And while he skated by the Rangers bench, he took blood on his face, which was either from him or from Boogaard, whatever it was. He took it off his like fingertips and flicked it three times or four times at the Rangers bench. The blood at the Rangers players.
So weird. Why is he doing that?
I really don't know.
There's absolutely no need for him to be doing that.
It's just a bizarre story. I mean, who flicks blood?
I don't know.
I mean, suspension worthy?
I mean, nothing. I think so.
Nothing's happened about it yet. I think that if the suspension was going to happen, it would have happened already.
It would be suspension worthy just because it's a bit of a health concern.
Well, I mean, I just think it's beyond the pale of trash talk or anything along those lines. I mean, you'd suspend the guy if he spit at the bench.
Exactly. I was just going to say, this is the same thing. The reason
worse.
Why spitting is frowned upon is because it's unsanitary. And
it's disgusting. It's insulting. It's rude. It's everything else. It's exactly what you don't want minor hockey players emulating.
And I mean, if the Ottawa Senators management and PR staff is intelligent, they'll force... Karkner to apologize and maybe do something with Canadian Blood Services or something like that.
He hasn't apologized yet, and I don't.
He did add it after. He acted like nothing happened.
It's clear. He did it.
I mean exactly. Stop denying it. It's on videotape. We have the video of it. We can see the blood being flicked. I mean, don't play us for fools. That's all I'm saying. Moving on to a equally bizarre story, and we referenced it earlier at the beginning of the show, the waffle-throwing incident at the end.
It's Wafflegate.
It's not Wafflegate.
Yes, it is. They're referring to it on TSN, on SportsCenter's Wafflegate, so we have to.
I don't care what they're referring it to as.
It's part of the lexicon.
What about Gate? As he works at Gate on our hockey, he's coaching, coaching hockey.
So I call it Gate. I'm working on Gate.
That's great. Gate.
That's great. Great game.
At the end of the Leafs game against Philadelphia.
Yeah, they got killed.
They got killed, which, par for the course now for the Leafs.
Yep.
Somebody threw a waffle on the ice and hit Francois Beauchemin.
I don't think he was hit, Drew.
No, he got hit by it.
Did he?
Was there a second waffle thrower?
Well, that's what I discussed earlier. If you go back to the film, and oddly enough, a guy named Zapruder happened to be filming it also, you can see that there's a second waffle that comes in and hits him.
How do we not know that the waffle, it was the one waffle thrower, or...
Was he behind the bushes?
It's one magic waffle. You can see that Boschman's head goes back and to the left. Back and to the
it's
left.
It's hilarious. It happened on Thursday night, and James Myrtle was tweeting about it, and he was interviewing players.
He wrote a story about it,
and some of the guys were just, you know, Luke Shen especially was going, I don't even know what to say. I don't know why someone's
playing like garbage.
Actually, some of the lines were funny. Why would somebody throw a waffle when the Leafs are playing like crepes?
Isn't it crepes?
I think it's crepes.
It's crepes.
It's French.
We just want to also throw in, too, for those who didn't listen to us on Kick, Drew is a huge fan of Kauai Crepe on Osborne. He used to go there almost four times a week.
Not one thing he has said now is accurate, in the least bit.
No, you like Kauai Crepe.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm not a huge fan. Now moving on to the...
were the crepes rolled too tight, Drew?
Yeah, exactly. You know, last one, magic pan, Mandelbaum. Last one is 23 busloads of fans from Quebec are invading tonight's Islanders-Thrashers game on Long Island. They've purchased about 1,100 tickets, apparently.
That's crazy.
Not a surprise that they were available, by the way.
Yep. Yeah.
And apparently what they're going to be doing, they're going to be moving from behind one net to the other net in the middle of the game. And at the 15-minute mark of the first and second periods, they're going to stand up and cheer for 30 seconds because it's been 15 years since the Nordiques left Quebec City.
Yep.
I like that.
I like this
whole
thing.
There's a lot of good about this.
First of all,
the Islanders have to be happy. They have 1,100 more fans than they were going to have anyways. Yeah. So, you know, good for them. They finally sold. I think that they broke their attendance record for the season now. It's just, I mean, they're not doing it to upstage anybody, but they're just showing, quote unquote, they're not doing it to upstage, but they're just saying, look, we're from Quebec City. We want a team back. Totally agree with them. They should have a team back. For God's sakes, Quebec City. Build an arena. Yeah. You're not getting a team back. No, they're not. They have no money. They have no deal in place to build an arena.
Oh, they're going
to
get it.
They want $170 million from the federal government.
They're
more likely to get another...
Can Glendale finance the Quebec City arena?
I think that's what they should do. I'm pretty sure... maybe they can just lift up the arena in Glendale and drop it in Quebec City.
Phil Lieberman has been quoted as saying ridiculous.
About Quebec City.
To Richie's last comment.
I mean, that's all I'm saying is that it's... Look, I think Quebec City should get a team. Build your arena. Don't rely on taxpayer money for it. You know, if you're getting $170 million from the province, which allegedly they want, that's fine. Do whatever the province of Quebec wants to do. I don't really care about it. First of all, you don't need a $400 million arena at all.
No, of course.
And this is the arena plan that has a moat in front of it, because what's a hockey arena without a moat in front of it? And just
Why don't they just remove the moat? That might take off $100 million. A moat's got to be pretty expensive
with the water and the hoses
and everything, the
especially
drainage system.
Especially because they have to have at least six Black Knights guarding the moat at all times.
Exactly.
So, you know, forget about the moat. Build your arena. Get a team back there. Good for you for invading in Long Island. It'll be entertaining to watch. See if they actually reference it on the broadcast tonight. But for God's sakes, Quebec City, do it. Get it done. Build the arena. I don't want to hear about Quebec City relocation anymore until that arena is built. It's that simple. When we come back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, six things we learned this week. And if it has anything to do with waffles and blood flicking, we're in good shape. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Seven a.m., 2 hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Still to come this hour, Craig Heisinger, General Manager of the Manitoba Moose. If you're listening in the car today and you're on your way to do your Christmas shopping, we do encourage you to stop by St. Vital Center's Food Hall before 6 p.m. tonight. Bring a new unwrapped toy for the Christmas cheerboard. You know, they love to accept cash donations as well. You know, give out some of that Christmas love, that sort of thing. And, of course, remember, a date with Richard Pollock to whoever we decide brings the best gift. Let's throw it over to Michael Remus. Remus, how's it going in the Cover It Live chat today? Good talk going on there?
Oh, the Cover It Live chat's going great, Drew. I'm having a great time over there. You know, anytime you guys bring up an article or bring up a play, I'm going to be posting the links in there. You can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/LegalCurve. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LegalCurve. And as every week, we'll have the show uploaded to illegalcurve.com, and you can listen to it again there.
Excellent. And that's it. So go to www.illegalcurve.com, join in the Cover It Live chat, and of course, you can find the show on iTunes well after the fact. Anyways, 11:03, it's time for Six Things We Learned This Week.
Six Things We Learned This Week.
We're going to start with Ezzy today on Six Things We Learned This Week. Ezzy, the overtime shootout in the regular season can be exciting and relevant when it lasts more than four or five rounds.
It definitely can, and we were talking about, you know, the big news last night and the big news, you know, going into today's games was, you know, Linus Omark's goal, and I wasn't a big fan of that, you know, that tomfoolery. But
nice word.
In Tuesday night's game, the Oilers and Ducks played on TSN, and we, you know, we got together, you know, earlier in the week, and we were talking about the game. The actual game itself wasn't that good. The Ducks were, you know, I believe they were up 2-0.
Yeah, they blew another two-goal lead.
And they blew the lead, and Edmonton came back, and then, you know, went to overtime, and then the shootout. The shootout went to 10 rounds, 20 shooters, and there were only three goals. I thought that watching that shootout, I was actually into it and excited because Nikolai Habibulin and Jonas Hiller were playing very well, and I thought this was an example of why the shootout actually can be relevant. You know, on this topic, I still think that the shootout shouldn't be in hockey. I actually favor a 10-minute 4-on-4 overtime bringing ties back. But on that night, the shootout was good because there was good goaltending, and there was no theatrics.
Okay, I like it. Richie, Alexei Kovalev is being unfairly blamed for the fact that he is a slow-skating floater.
Yeah, he's a slow-skating floater. He's one of the most talented players in the league. You know, Alexei Kovalev's one of the best players. Every time I listen to Gordon Miller, that's what he tells me. I know. Like, I know he's a great, he's amazing talent. He's had those DVDs in the video. But Alexei Kovalev's been a floater his entire career, doesn't really care about defense, and is pretty slow. And his talent-wise, guys, his talent is you know, he's a great shooter. He's not a bad passer. He doesn't pass much. He's a great shooter. He's got great stick handling skills. But when Brian Murray signed him, and whether it was Brian Murray or an order from above from Eugene Melnyk, when Brian Murray signed him to a 2-year deal and then gave him to Corey Kluson to coach, Corey Kluson needs to know what he has, okay? And they need to discuss with each other what they have and what they're doing, because Kluson was there at the end of the season before. The fact that Corey Kluson's now singling out Alexei Kovalev for his lack of this, you know, there's a lot of players in Ottawa who could be singled out. But what they're singling out Kovalev for, though, is for what he is. He's a 37, 38, he's a late 30s NHL hockey player. He's been in the league for over, like, 15 years. You know what he is. Don't punish him for what he is. You signed him, let him be that.
I have two questions for you. One, what role should they use Kovalev in, given that he's a slow-skating floater? And then two, do you think that the reason that Kluston's calling him out is because they know that there's no long-term ramifications for doing so? The guy's a free agent after the season?
First, you want to load him up on the power play time because that's where he has more room and his skating ability won't be as much of a detriment to him. In terms of even strength time, you need to put him with defensively reliable players who are pretty good skaters. The second question, yes, you know, he's on this last year of his 2-year deal here, so that is a factor. And also, it's the fact that this team is put together without a lot of offense, and Corey Kluson is desperate, and he's trying to wake up Alexei Kovalev. Guys, not only is he what he always was, but he's also 37, 38 years old. I mean, he's slowing down.
And we're expecting him to move at the deadline, especially if Ottawa's out of the playoff race. But I mean, nobody should be offering him anything more than a 1-year, $1 million deal. Yeah. I mean, what is he giving you at this point? He's getting all the ice time. He's getting enough ice time, Drew, that if he's going to have a 40-point season,
he plays when he wants.
He deserves to be booed and criticized in the media and by the fans.
Why? You know what you're getting. He was enigmatic in Montreal. He's enigmatic in Ottawa. He's enigmatic everywhere. I mean, I agree with Richie. You know what you're getting, and why are you shocked when he's not performing up to the standards?
I don't think they're shocked. It's enough. They're fed up in Ottawa.
Why? You be fed up with either Brian Murray or Eugene Melnyk.
$5 million. That's why.
Well, but who gave him that contract?
Nobody forced them to do it.
Nobody forced.
Why is it the player's fault? The player is playing exactly how you would think he would play.
No, it's not a matter of fault. It's just a matter of, you don't boo him just because it's his fault. It's just you're bad. You boo him.
But it's the coach, Ezzy. The coach is just stepping up here and saying, "Hey, Kovalev, this, Kovalev, that." You know, Alexei Kovalev.
You don't see the compete level. You know, Pierre Gomez.
You never saw it, though.
That's the point, Izzy. Have you ever seen
right.
it?
But I'm not arguing with you.
This is the guy who took a slash in the playoff game, dropped his stick like he was shot, and it cost the Habs a win in overtime.
They came back and won that series in seven.
They happened to win the series, but he still looked like he got shot.
And as I was alluded to earlier, Scott Burnside in our first hour, and I've talked about it on our show before, let's say Kovalev's playoff track record is excellent.
Yeah.
He's an excellent playoff player. So he'd be a nice rental for a team that needs some power play and needs some skill.
Back to Montreal.
L.A.?
It's not a bad suggestion.
The Philadelphia Flyers have proven everyone wrong by having regular season success without spending a lot on their two goaltenders.
Okay, and we're not even at the halfway point of the season, but so far this year, I mean, by the way, how did Bobrovsky get $1.8 million, but Brian Boucher got $925,000? How did that happen? How did he get a $1.8
million? Bobrovsky's on rookie bonuses, is he?
So that's why it counts.
Right, yeah.
Okay. It's a little bit weird because if you actually combine Boucher and Leighton, they're at $1.8, but... And, well, like I said, so far this year, this is a stat line for Sergei Bobrovsky. 14-4-2 with a 2.21 goals against average and a .925 save percentage. And once again, a lot of us still don't know that much about him. He's only 22, coming out of the Russian league, and obviously someone did the right scouting. But Bobrovsky has just been unbelievable in 20 games.
The 925 save percentage is very impressive.
And guys, let's keep in mind, Philly arguably has the best defense aside from
Chicago. I was going to say, how much of a success has to do?
Six things I learned this week is Pronger, Mazaros, Timonen, Coburn, Carl, and O'Donnell.
But Antti Niemi was a mediocre goaltender, and they won the cup.
Yeah.
So the point is Bobrovsky the best goalie in the world?
His numbers are good, is he?
His numbers are good, and he's playing well. And the point is that going into this season, everyone expected Philly to push some money at Turco or push some money at this guy
or that
guy.
Which they did, and he rejected them.
Right.
They pushed money at Leighton. Go look at Leighton, how much Leighton's making for playing for the Phantoms this year. Because he's not coming up to the big team unless Boucher or Bobrovsky get injured. He's stuck in the minors for the next while.
And, you know, the Goalie Guild website is going to like that I'm analyzing this, but Bernie Parent was quoted in the Philadelphia media praising Bobrovsky, comparing him to Pelle Lindbergh. He's got athleticism. He's a talented goalie. He's young. Flyers are getting their bang for their buck, and I think the Flyers are going back to the finals.
Unfortunately,
this isn't a prediction of mine.
Unfortunately, they're paying Leighton $1.55 million to play goal for the Phantoms in Philadelphia.
I just want to see Sergei Bobrovsky stop Sidney Crosby in the playoffs.
Yeah, until he does
Eastern Conference final preview.
Could be.
People who are bring up race when discussing the PK Subban benching are just looking for shock value.
Yeah, they're looking for shock value. No. I hate when people, you know, most people come up and talk about race in terms of the PK Subban issue. What they're really doing is they're hockey outsiders jumping in and trying to make an argument. And I always hate that. You don't watch hockey enough. If you have been watching the Habs enough, you know that PK Subban gets a little bit exuberant. But the biggest thing, forget his antics in terms of trash talk and all that stuff. Let's talk about on the ice product. Let's talk about what he's done. Sure, he's offensively capable. But these are the same people who cried last year for him to get called up from the AHL because he was a great player. You need time to develop. What the Montreal Canadiens of the 70s used to do is develop those guys for a long time before they were called up, similar to what successful general manager Kenny Holland does now with Detroit. Guys pay their dues. So Jacques Martin, who you can criticize his Florida track record with young players, those young players haven't proven to be good under any other coach. In Ottawa, he developed Marian Hossa, Marty Havlat, amongst Zdeno Chara, Wade Redden. They've all gone on to successful big-money contracts. He is showing PK Subban that he needs to play with more discipline in his game, not trash talking, in his game. He runs around in his own zone. He pinches at the wrong time. To be able to play National Hockey League defense on a team that's going to be a top three team in the conference maybe this year, you need to be able to pick and choose when you're going to be aggressive. And this is a learning curve. This is a hockey decision, not a race decision, not anything else. This is simply a hockey decision. And if you don't think that, then you haven't been watching the Habs play.
The Dallas Stars are the best team in the NHL right now that no one is talking about.
Okay, the Dallas Stars right now, if you've watched them play, they look like a very good hockey team, okay? The Dallas Stars are playing in the toughest conference.
Mm-hmm.
The Dallas Stars are playing in a very good division with the Phoenix Coyotes, the San Jose Sharks, the Anaheim Ducks, the Los Angeles Kings.
Best division in hockey last year.
This is the best division in hockey last year, okay? They've got excellent goaltending. Kari Lehtinen, 2002 second overall pick.
Mm-hmm.
He's 13-7-2, okay? These are his numbers, .915 save percentage. Okay, Dallas has a mobile defense corps. They've got a lot of young talent. You've got the Jamie Benns and the James Neals and the Louis Erickson. These are young guys. You've got one of my favorite leaders in the league, and Brendan Morrow, who's, you know, he's not a 70-point guy.
He hasn't scored in years, but he's been solid. He doesn't score very much,
but he's a solid, one of the best hitters in the league. You've got good support in Mike Ribeiro, and you've got Brad Richards, who is playing unbelievably. No one is talking about how good this team is. And we're after 27 games, I think more people should start talking about the Dallas Stars as a Western Conference contender and put them up there with the Detroit Red Wings and the Chicago Blackhawks. It's time. I mean, let's start talking about them. This is a good hockey team.
Joffrey Leupold's return in Anaheim may have gone unnoticed, but he provides the Ducks with another scorer on a team that gives up a fair amount in its own end.
You know, at some point in the course of the season, you're not going to be able to rectify your defensive problems because there's just so many in Anaheim, right? I mean, they have a great goaltender, one of the best goaltenders in the National Hockey League, but defense, they don't have a lot of depth. And can you address the depth throughout in the middle of the season? Maybe not. And that's why I think Leupold's addition to the team, return to the team, is important. I mean, he's played four games so far since he's been back from that blood infection in his back there. He has one goal. Okay, he's going to ease his way in. But what he does is he adds another scorer. You know, that alleviates a little bit of pressure off guys like Bobby Ryan, Ryan Getzlaf, Corey Perry, who've all been pretty good. Timo Solani has been, again, unbelievable. You know, he defies age. And you add a guy like Leupold in there with Saku Koivu, and what you do is you add another scorer. And while the team can't defend, and that's going to probably be their that's been their Achilles heel all year and probably be the reason that they have trouble cracking the playoffs, adding another scorer just adds to a strength on the team. And I think right now it's going a little bit underreported, and I think it's important.
Richie, we mentioned that shootout earlier in the week. Wow, did, speaking of Leupold, wow, did he get booed in Edmonton?
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw that.
It's not his fault that they traded Chris Pronger for him and Elias
Smith. Yeah, didn't understand it.
He got the boos.
I don't understand
time.
That at all. It doesn't make any sense to me, but whatever.
Canadian hockey fans, we love to boo players.
I know. It's doesn't make any sense, though. I don't think he did anything wrong at Edmonton.
No, Edmonton boy. That's why they're booing him for the
Edmonton. Yeah. Great. You know what? Smarten up. Anyways, that's it for
Drew,
six things.
Drew, can I have my pen back, please?
In a minute, you can. That's it for six things this week. When we come back, we're going to go on the beat. We still have Moose General Manager Craig Heisinger coming up. Lots more to come. Stay with us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm pleased to report that I have given Ezzy back his pen, so all is good in the studio and the tension has been cut. Still to come, Craig Heisinger, the Manitoba Moose, coming up in the next segment. You know, big finish to the show this week. We've been on since 9 a.m. We're glad that you've been joining with us. It's time for On the Beat.
On the Beat.
Starting in Los Angeles today with On the Beat, where Rich Hammond wrote an interesting article about Kings defenseman Matt Green and the fearlessness it takes to be a shot blocker in the NHL. I play on the Illegal Curve hockey team, and you know, while we have been dominant in our rec league this year, if a puck is coming at me, I'm usually bailing the hell out of the way because, well, frankly, it's rec hockey and I'm too handsome to get injured. To be a shot blocker in the NHL, you do have to have a certain testicular fortitude that it really does take a special player to have.
Well, yeah, you definitely have to have testicular fortitude, as you said, Drew. But you also have to have, you know, a certain intelligence, and that's what Rich Hammond, who is the LA Kings insider, he mentioned and he talks about. And you know, Jack Johnson is currently leading that team in block shots, whereas Matt Green, you know, he probably will end up leading the team. But Jack Johnson's an offensive guy, and he's really, you know, worked on that and got in, made sure that he's got himself into shooting lanes. And this article is a good little read. It's a bit of a long article, you know, for about shot blocking. But you know, we talked about Kelly Rudy's article. He wrote and said that it's a little bit overblown shot blocking in this day and age, and you know, it very well could be. But this article is about how it is actually a pretty skillful thing.
It's certainly an art.
It's a skill, yeah.
It is worth noting, of course, all the articles that we reference in this segment are available at www.illegalcurve.com. You can join Michael Ramos.
It's funny
there.
Though. I mean, NHL.com, NHL doesn't keep statistics in terms of time of possession, but if you actually go on and see the correlation between shot blocking and winning, it's actually not that high, because if you're blocking that many shots, you don't have the puck.
Right.
Johnson's
so
got
it's a fine line.
Just interrupt, Richie. Jack Johnson's got 54 blocked shots already, about two a game, whereas he had 80-something
right. And Matt,
the whole season last year.
And Matt Green, UND product, former Oiler, mm-hmm. has... where's that? He has... Now, this is the big difference, is that... Now, is Green better than Johnson? Is Johnson better than Green? Realize this, that Johnson played 6 more minutes a game. So there's a big advantage there.
Yeah. If you play more minutes, you're gonna block more
exactly.
shots, of course.
I think that has to be something that we have to note.
Hey, Richie, you remember who on the Dallas Stars was always
Craig Ludwig.
Yeah, was always
Ludwig had those huge shin pads.
Yeah.
That was his. He played for the Habs before that too. Yeah.
He's pretty much a goalie.
And the, if Craig Ludwig was wearing goalie shin pads, imagine what the goalies were wearing back in the day. It was before the equipment
they
was
were
regulated.
Wearing shin pads.
Well, they were wearing two like double shin pads or something. Yeah. Ansar Khan of MLive.com, good friend of this program, has an article about the Red Wings' patience wearing thin with Yuri Hudler. A lot was expected of Hudler this year. Hasn't lived up to expectations.
Never really has in his time in Detroit. When I've seen him play in person, he just lacks defensive conscience. He doesn't really care, and he's scatterbrained, and he's out there. And you know, when he goes to Detroit, the problem is cracking the top six, right? You know, if you're an offensive player, cracking the top six, you know, see Ville Leino.
Yeah.
The skill's there. Yuri Hudler in Detroit probably over time is going to develop into a really, really skilled player. Maybe it's a change of scenery. Maybe he needs to play for a coach that gives him a little bit more offensive freedom. His value would still be pretty high. I mean, I could see Detroit moving him for a player who could provide a little more of a two-way presence on the team and add some scoring ability. Hudler doesn't really buy into the team concept. I thought he actually fit in really well in the KHL last year. Probably he finished, I think, top five in scoring. And the truth is the KHL is less of a, you know.
It's a one-man show.
And there's more room on the ice, and there's less of it. It's less physical. He's not a bigger guy. He's not a big guy.
You're playing against less talent also.
Exactly. And so, was Hudler have the talent to play in the National Hockey League? Sure. I don't think Mike Babcock likes him. I don't think Mike Babcock ever liked him. And I think that it's a situation here that's probably getting close to saying, okay, we tried this, it didn't work, let's move on.
You hate to give away a guy with that much talent for nothing, though. Because, you know, you look at what Leno's doing in Philadelphia right now.
Leno was waivers, and that's why I'm saying you maybe trade Hudler.
I know. But, I mean, at some point, everyone was saying Leno.
Remember, Drew. I mean, Detroit's so talented. They've let guys like Kyle Quincy go on waivers, who's not struggling, but had some nice time in L.A. and Colorado. You know, Ville Leino on waivers. They allow guys to go on waivers because they're just so deep and it takes so long to develop on purpose. It takes so long to develop their talent.
Right, and I think this is you're right, and this is why Babcock's fed up, and the Wings probably will move him because they Zetterberg, Datsyuk, Holmstrom first line, and then you've got Bertuzzi, Franzen, and Filppula there on the second line. You've got enough guys that are guys that can skate and beat guys, he's not going to the net. That's what he wrote about Khan, and he hit the nail on the head. He's not doing what he needs to do on that team, and that's why they're going to give the third line minutes to the other guys like the Eves and the Abdelkaders and those guys, right?
Yeah, and Eves ain't scoring for anybody, so.
Yeah. Next article comes from Katie Carrera of the Washington Post. Really a very interesting article. I like this article a lot.
She took over for Tariq El-Bashir there.
That's right.
Tariq El-Bashir just accepted my Facebook friend request. So he's not with the Capitals anymore?
No,
he doesn't do the Caps beat. He does the college basketball beat there,
really?
I think.
Well, he accepted me on Facebook, which is pretty cool, right, Drew?
You guys can Facebook chat about Drew. Yeah.
Continue on.
Okay, are you sure? The Facebook segment's the next segment, I think. Katie Carrera of the Washington Post with a very a profile, really, on Alexander Semin of the Caps. And, of course, saying that he's enigmatic. Nobody really knows a lot about him. He's very quiet and reserved. And the Caps have a big decision they have to make with Alexander Semin coming up.
He's basically the antithesis of Ovechkin, isn't he?
Yeah, very much so. You know, in that Ovechkin is as big, is as larger than life as he can be, whereas Semin is quite happy to really not give away any information about what he's thinking.
And it's enigmatic not only to us, but to Katie Couric and to maybe the Washington management. He's only on a one-year deal right now, pending UFA, I believe.
Yeah, he is.
So,
a huge decision they have to make with him. He's having the best statistical year of his career.
He's got an unbelievable shot, Drew.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a shot up there with Stamkos and Ovechkin. And when you have a shot like that, and you put the puck on net enough, you're going to score a lot of goals. Is he a perennial 40-goal scorer? And if that's the case, and he gets to free agency.
Leads the Caps with 18 goals, top five in the league with 33 points.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a guy that, the Caps really can't let him go.
No, I agree with that. I absolutely agree with that.
So who cares how enigmatic he is in the dressing room and everything else if he's able to perform on the ice?
I think what they're also talking about there, Drew, is whether he goes back to Russia after the season.
Why would he do that?
I don't know. I don't think he will.
I don't understand why. I mean, you want to play with the best players. You want.
Yeah, that's what you think, Drew, but you don't know what he thinks.
That's true.
Maybe he wants to go home.
Maybe he doesn't like Washington. Maybe
he's going home.
Bob Cole and the Flyers in Red Army in 75. But, maybe he just hates. Maybe he wants to play in Russia, make $10 million a year.
I don't think he will. I think he will stay in North America. The question is,
stay with the Caps.
Will he stay with the Caps? And I think that he will.
He doesn't have to be. It seems like he's the kind of guy who doesn't want the spotlight on him. And when you're playing behind Alex Ovechkin, even if you may be playing better than Alex Ovechkin, you don't have the spotlight on you.
There's a lot to be said for that, and I respect him for that because I have him in my hockey pool.
And that's why you respect him.
And it's a pool that respects goals, so I respect him. He's got 18.
Do you respect Wood?
You beat me to it, Richie. I was going right there with it also.
I respect Tim.
Him or Tim?
Tim.
Oh, that's good.
Producer Drew. We're on the radio right now.
Really? Why am I in my underwear then?
Drew. The guy in front of you right there?
That's him.
That's what I'm talking about!
Nicely done, Tim. Final article today comes from Tim Warnsby of CBCSports.ca with a story about the health troubles that Thrashers head coach Craig Ramsey has had to fight through for the last, you know, 30-some-odd years of his life.
And, you know, for the people that are on illegalcurve.com right now, Richie, and that are in the cover live, that's the article you have to read because I wasn't aware of this. Drew found three out of the four articles this week. You got to read what, you know, Craig Ramsey's doing a great job in Atlanta. You got to read what he went through. And
apparently he was suffering from internal bleeding out of, he was close to, apparently he was close to death at some point in time, and they've, he had stomach issues, and, you know, in 1993 they removed his stomach.
Wow.
So his esophagus is connected directly to his small intestine.
He is, on this story, Tim Warren's be a great writer. He is, in terms of coaching, first of all, one of the best defensive forwards of all time by all, by people who've seen him play, who saw him play in the 70s and that time, but also a terrific coach, and he's doing a great job with that Atlanta team. They're currently in the playoffs. They've had some nice performances, but I think the biggest thing he's done in terms of just on-ice performance is he's instilled a defensive conscience into that team, similar to what he had when he played, and that's served that team extremely well. They're making some nice steps forward, and it's nice to see Craig Ramsey get that head coaching job. He's in Philly for time there, but he gets a head coaching job, and he's entrusted to move forward with this team for a long period of time.
Best part of the story is that when he was playing with he had his first surgery on his stomach in 1971 when he was playing with the Sabres, and didn't even tell them that he was having the surgery.
That's a tough guy.
I don't think that would fly in this day and age of the NHL anymore.
Probably not.
Let's leave it there. When we come back, Craig Heisinger, Manitoba Moose general manager, discussing the Under-17 World Challenge and the Manitoba Moose. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday morning, 11:30. You're listening to Sports Radio 1290. We're pleased to be joined on the line now by Manitoba Moose General Manager Craig Heisinger. Craig, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us.
No problem, guys. How are you?
Very well. Great, very well. How about yourself?
Good, thanks.
That's good. Craig, let's start with the Under-17 World Challenge, which is coming to Winnipeg later on this month in the beginning of January. For those of our listeners who might not be totally familiar with the tournament, can you give us some background about it?
Well, it's a Hockey Canada initiative that goes to various different locations in Canada. For the next 2 years, it's in Winnipeg at the MTS Iceplex, and this year sharing the sponsorship with us is the PCU Centre in Portage-la-Prairie. It starts, it's for the best under-17 players, not only in North America, but in Europe as well. And Canada is comprised of five different regions. So it's not unlike the World Junior Tournament, but the major difference is Canada has five regional teams. Team West, made up of Saskatchewan and Manitoba, Team Pacific of Alberta and British Columbia and so on. There's five Canadian teams and four European teams in the United States.
Okay, there's some players that some fans should watch out for if they're going to be attending the games in Winnipeg here at the MTSplex. Is there some players that some of the younger fans and your older fans should be looking out for?
Well, this tournament is generally produced. It's sort of a starting point, especially in Canada, for the World Junior teams. Mm-hmm. Local products. Jonathan Toews has played in here. Some guys that have played for the Moose, Guillaume Debian and Alexander Bolduc, who now play for the Canucks. The Sedins played in it, Alex Ovechkin. So there's a lot of good players where this is the starting point for it. And Team West has some good young players to watch out for. Brendan Leipzig is a good young player who plays for the Portland Winterhawks. Chris Drieger, who's a goalie with the Tri-City Americans. Justin Almonic, who's a defenseman with the Winnipeg Wild. There are lots of good young players and players that you're going to see moving up. This is the starting point, at least for the Hockey Canada initiatives.
True North and obviously, obviously by association yourself, have been very adamant that you want this event to be world-class. Can you maybe just talk a little bit about some of the preparations that True North has undertaken leading up to this tournament?
Well, certainly a major part of this tournament has been the Iceplex and certainly the PCU Center in Portage-la-Prairie. And the tournament has traditionally not been in a market the size of Winnipeg. It's usually been in smaller markets such as Timmins, Alberta, Port Alberni, B.C., places like that. So it's it was incumbent upon us when Hockey Canada awarded you here, especially for 2 years, that we try to move it to the next level. Whether we're able to do that or not remains to be seen, but that is certainly our goal, and we're hopeful not only for the experience of the players that come, but for the fans that come as well.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by General Manager of the Manitoba Moose, Craig Heisinger. Now, Craig, transitioning a little bit to your more full-time job, that being as GM of the Moose, of course. You know, expectations were quite high coming into the season for the Moose. You look through their roster; it's just laden with young, talented players. The Moose have sort of been off to a bit of a slow start. I believe fifth in the North Division. What do you attribute the slow start to?
Well, a lot of young players, and, you know, just because there's a lot of high draft picks doesn't necessarily mean it just happens right away. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of players out of our lineup as it sits right now. We've had some significant injuries, but that's part of life in the American League, and you have to find your way through it. And that's just the way it is. I think the biggest issue is we have some young players finding their way, and it generally doesn't happen overnight. It usually takes some time, and we'll see where we are when we turn the corner in mid-January and February.
Can you give a little bit of an update maybe to some of the fans out there on Jordan Schrader's situation and also Cody Hodgson?
Both of them returned home to Winnipeg today to be reevaluated by our doctors.
So that's at that point right now. Okay. Now also, Craig, in terms of some of the other, Sergei Shirokov and a couple other players that, some of the Vancouver fans keep their eye on pretty closely. In terms of getting into the roster, it's been a bit of a transformation over the past couple of years, from a veteran to a younger roster. Is that put more pressure on the coaches? Because we're in a market here where obviously results certainly do matter, but also the development program for Vancouver. How do you balance the two?
Well, I think you try to balance it on a daily basis, and it does put pressure on the coaches. But I think over the past 5 or 6 years, I think the coaches we've had here not only have moved on to NHL positions, but absolutely, part of that is development and doing a good job there, because it doesn't matter. The issues are all the same. It doesn't matter if it's midget or junior or American League or ECHL or the NHL. It's all about recruiting and development. Mm-hmm. Because you get to the National Hockey League, it doesn't mean that the development stops or starts or whatever. Development is development, and it happens at every level, and all coaches have to deal with it. This year is a little bit of an anomaly. I think the league is an anomaly this year. There's a lot of veteran players looking for jobs, still looking for jobs. And the league is a lot younger, and I think everybody's in a lot younger place. But it's all about where you find yourself in January and February.
Craig, what's it been like for yourself and the hockey club in working with Nuke head coach Claude Noel? Obviously, you didn't know him as well as you did with Scotty Arneal.
You know what? You're somewhat inaccurate there. I knew Claude very well from our time in the international.
I apologize about that.
No, that's okay. That's okay. Claude's an absolute home run. He is a very, very bright, articulate coach. Lots of experience. Been down the road lots, which you guys previously described of development, and had a lot of success with these types of teams in Milwaukee. And I think the one thing that really stood out for us in pursuing Claude was his ability to get a lot out of the players and be a very good developer for the young players.
You have a pretty close relationship with Scott Arneal, and he moved on, most people are aware, to Columbus this year, and he's had a pretty successful job there. Can you talk a little bit about, the job of the Moose being able to continually filter NHL coaches, coaches from the AHL to the NHL, whether it be Alain Vigneault, obviously Randy Carlyle, Scott Arneal. It seems like when you come to Manitoba, that is going to be a jumping point to your next job is going to be in the National Hockey League. And is that a testament to not only management but to entire ownership? Is that a testament to the way that the entire organization is run, and also to the coaches? Or can you kind of maybe delve out exactly the responsibility for how these coaches all get to the next level?
Well, I think there's two ways to look at it. First off, I think it's a testament to the coaches that come here in the first place, because I think if you or I all of a sudden start coaching here, I don't think that necessarily means we're going to be coaches in the National Hockey League. So I think the quality, the first point is the hiring process, and I think for the most part, we've done a good job with our hires, and not only are they good people, or not only are they good coaches, they're very good people, and that gives them an opportunity to move up. But no different than the players, they've taken advantage of the opportunity that's been provided here for them and made the most of it.
Craig, before we let you go, for people who want to get tickets to the Under-17 tournament, how do they go about doing so?
You can call go online at Ticketmaster CA, or I don't know the phone number off the top of my head, but any Ticketmaster outlet or call the Moose office has all the availability for Under-17 tickets or the PCU Center in Portage.
Excellent. Craig Heisinger, General Manager of the Manitoba Moose, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks a lot for the interest, guys.
Take care, Craig. Thanks very much. Yeah, you know, should be a good tournament.
Yeah, and you know, it's great. It's great that we've had Zinger on the show, as he's known, in this city. And you know, it's funny. I guess our question, he has a little bit more of a relationship with Claude Noel, which is fine. But you know, Richie's last question was very deserving.
Half an hour to get
that's
it
okay. Yeah, we'll just make fun of you about that for the next 10 years.
The Manitoba Moose have had excellent coaches, and I mean Jean Perron.
Yeah.
He was our first coach, but
he was the
Alain Vigneault, Randy Carlyle,
and
Scotty Arneil. You got a cup with Carlyle.
Yeah.
You got a potential cup with Vigneault. And you never know with the up and coming team with Columbus, we might have a long run there. I mean,
well, one point I missed there, guys, is the fact that all three of those coaches are still where they were hired.
That's right. We've said it many times on this program. The Manitoba Moose run that organization as classy as can be. They run it as well as an NHL team is run.
Yes, and Craig Heisinger has done an excellent job.
From top to bottom,
it
is a classy organization. You know,
he deserves a lot of credit.
They fly charter flights, which is unheard of in the AHL.
Yep.
They do everything in their power to say we're running this like we would run a premier NHL hockey team.
They probably run it
better than lots of other NHL teams.
And a lot of coaches around the AHL or that aren't in the AHL right now would gladly drop everything to come to Manitoba because of the work Heisinger and others have done.
There's more attention, media attention here than you're going to get in like Phoenix, for example, or you're going to get in Atlanta, for example. I mean, that's one paper there. There's two papers here. There's a radio station. You're going to get more attention. And I think one thing that we should point out, and it's difficult to ask Craig about that, is the fact that now the team's generally been pretty veteran with some nice younger players and then obviously good goaltending. This year it's a little bit different. There's so many young players now. With Vancouver's finally started to develop. They went through a big lull there of developing talent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, they had their Kesslers and Burrows guys, and there's a big lull kind of for a couple of years there. And now they're filtering through a lot more guys, Jordan Schrader and Hodgson, the guys who are currently injured, and Shirokov and guys like that. And what happens is it's hard to answer the question, how do you balance that? You have to play the young players because Vancouver is the parent club. Mm-hmm. But you also want to get results. And so, you know, those young players generally will take the spot. Say those young players weren't in the system. They probably would have signed veterans who probably would have performed better on a night-to-night basis in the NHL or at least been more consistent. So it's a balancing act in the AHL because you have to please the NHL club, but you also have to please the market. And I think they've done a very good job of balancing that. Now, this year's a bit of an adjustment because there's a bigger infusion to me of significantly talented young players. But again, I think the Moose will figure that out as Mr. Hagensinger said in January, February.
You're right. There was a bit of a time when, you know, some of the Moose players that made it to the NHL, it was a surprise. Like, oh, nobody really thought they'd make it up there that quickly or do whatever. Now it is expected that the guys who are playing for the Moose day, night in, night out are going to be the future of the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, and there's already been speculation that Cody Hodgson, who unfortunately was injured in Oklahoma City, he might be up in the next couple of months.
Apparently,
we're going to play him, though.
They're going to reevaluate him, but the word on the street is he might be out for a month.
Where are you going to play him, though? He needs to spend a year in the NHL. Where are you going to play him in the NHL?
There's no if you do it in the if you put him into the NHL like this, all you're doing is stunting his growth, and you might as well call him Nazem Kadri.
Well, he's a center, and their three centers are as good as you're going to get right now.
And Yannick Hansen?
That, too.
That's who Spotty's taking, really, though, isn't he?
No, that's fine. You understand what I'm saying. Up the middle. You want him to play at center because that's really what you groomed him as, right?
Natural center,
and your centers are Henrik Sedin, number one center. Ryan Kessler is good at numbers. Two centers you're going to get. And then Matty Malhotra, spoken about this show, the 62.2% face-off percentage. So there's your top three centers. Yeah. Where's Hodgson playing? If he's not playing the top three lines, he should not be in the NHL. And I think he's well-served to be in the NHL, AHL, the entire year.
Yeah. And it's a bonus. And if the result happens where you need to call them up, well, that's what's called great.
Good organizations, Drew, have their young players play in the minors unless they're absolutely tearing it up to a point where they can't keep them down there anymore. That's what good organizations do. Bad organizations, or
are you listening, Toronto fans?
Well,
it's not a bad organization.
Yes, it is.
You can use that as an example. Luke Shen is up there when he's 18 years old. He shouldn't have been up there when he's 18 years old. Never mind the fact that you run out his 3 years of his entry level deal. Now it's already going to be up at the end of this year. But you're wasting his development. He wasn't ready for it, and he had a regression. And now this year he's finally moving a little bit forward. Same thing with Nazem Kadri. You're rushing him. Let him play a year at the AHL, maybe even two. What's the difference? You're going to suck anyways.
We've chronicled a number of times how the Leafs set up their young players to fail. That's a bad organization in my books. Done. Let's come to, when we, let's go to break. When we come back, one final segment. It's called Rapid Fire. You know it. You love it. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Ezzy, you know we're on air, right? That was Ezzy singing. We apologize for that. Welcome back to the...
I know. You don't want to know how I know? Because this is the only time of the week, only day of the week, that I'll be up before 1 in the afternoon. That's how I know.
We're live, baby.
Hey, now. Hey, now.
Welcome back to the Legal Curve Hockey Show. We'll be cutting Ezra's mic for
you. We're not doing the hey now? It's already... Come on, give me a hey now.
Hey now's got to be exciting in at a particular time. I disagree with your hey now. Welcome back to the Legal Curve Hockey Show. It's time for Rapid Fire.
Remus is even mad.
Rapid Fire.
Remus is shaking his head in there. I didn't think I would ever get a... Okay, go ahead.
In Wednesday night's game between the Canucks and the Anaheim Ducks, Ducks goaltender Curtis McIlhenny took a shot to the helmet, causing him to crumble to the ice, bleeding profusely from the head. After making the save with his helmet, the puck bounced to Daniel Sedin, who shot it into the vacated net. It was a bang-bang play, but Ducks coach Randy Carlyle was incensed post-game that the play wasn't stopped when McIlhenny went down. Should the NHL adopt the IIHF rule regarding the play being stopped immediately upon the puck contacting a goalie's helmet?
No. Case-by-case basis, Drew. Say a puck's, you know, sometimes Dominic Hasek used to stop the puck with his head intentionally. Depends. If it's a situation like that, yes, it should be stopped immediately. Situation that it's intentional or just the puck goes to the corner, then you shouldn't stop it. It should be a discretionary rule.
Richie, I think you have a point there, but I think they should adopt this rule, and I think it sets a good standard for minor hockey all across the world, too. But, I mean... The reason why I feel like that is for the sake of...
it's about the children?
It really is about the children.
Won't somebody please think of the children?
It's also about the adults because we're an NHL show, but...
In the never-ending battle between advertisers and viewers, advertisements have begun to pop up on televisions mid-game during the course of the action. The latest example occurred in the Leafs-Caps game on Monday night when an animated insect appeared advertising the DVD release of the movie Inception. As more and more people PVR games, thus enabling them to fast-forward through the commercials, what do you think of advertisers' latest endeavor to market their product?
You're saying that to me, Drew, you have an ad hanging over your face right now.
It's odd. I tattooed an ad on my face,
yeah,
like the boxers.
Back.
Well, there is a Sports Radio 1290 sticker.
In your back hair.
Yeah. Shaved it into my back hair.
I don't have an issue with that. I mean, if they're gonna tear apart this, I don't mind if it pops up in the corner or things like that during the game action. What I really don't like is the digital ad on the behind the glass. That just bothers me.
See, I like that. I don't know why. I just do. I mean, there's no reason why I like it.
It draws my attention away from the play. I don't like that. I don't mind if it's in the corner. They can have all the ads they want on the corner.
In this day and age, though, when
it's true,
as soon as advertising was sold on YouTube and now you have pop-up ads on every single website, I mean, this is just the internet in real life, really, if you think about it. Now you're going to see ads popping up, and there's nothing you can do about them. It's just, it's there. Yeah, I mean,
it actually sounds like a new WB show, the internet in real life. I like it, Ezzy.
Well, Al Gore did a great job when he created the internet.
Mark Edward Vlasic was once earmarked to be the stud defenseman of the future for the San Jose Sharks. From 36 points in his third year in the NHL to 16 points last year to 0 points so far this year and a -6 plus minus, worst among Sharks defensemen, the bottom seems to have fallen out for Vlasic. Is this a case of a player being exposed as not as talented as once actually thought as he faces other teams' top talent game in and game out instead of the third and fourth line players he was facing off against during his breakout season of 3 years ago?
It's a fair point, Drew. He's a beautiful skater and he can move the puck really well. His offensive game from the point hasn't turned into what they thought. And yeah, you know, defensively, he was always lacking a bit. It's a fairly smart defenseman, but not that strong. And, you know, can get taken care of on the boards pretty good by some bigger opposing forwards. So yeah, night in, night out against the top pairing of another team, unless he really gets his positioning very sound, it's going to be difficult for him. I think you nailed it there in terms of the taking the next step has been very difficult for him. But yeah, his lack of progression still has been surprising, considering the amount of talent he has, especially offensively. His offensive inability has been way more of a surprise to me than his defensive inability.
It's not even that a lack of progression. It is a regression.
Yeah, it is.
And he struggled big time. And I mean, Todd McClellan obviously notices that. And the Sharks lost Rob Blake, who put in big time minutes, even at his age last year. And he's struggling, Drew. And I mean, Vlasic is so young still. And I mean, you just hope that San Jose is not by any means a lock for the playoffs this year.
They're certainly weak on defense, which I think Richard's pulling up right now.
23 years old. I mean, we've talked about their defense before. That was my six things we learned this week, I think 2-3 weeks ago. They need another defenseman in there.
Yeah, and that's the problem. I mean, they miss Rob Blake, who is about 104 years old, but they still miss him more than they ever thought they would.
Once they got in there, I mean, you know, Dan Boyle's your best defenseman, and then the next one's not even close. Doug Murray's a good, solid defenseman, but he's a poor skater. He gets torn apart by speedy guys wide. And his offensive ability is lacking.
Richie, so, what are the chances we see the Sharks and the Habs love to make trades? What are the chances we see a Yannick Weber moved there or something like that for a guy like Logan Couture? No, they're not going to trade Logan Couture.
No, but I understand what you're saying, Eddie. But I think for me, San Jose needs more of a two-way guy more than a Yannick Weber, who's kind of a specialized offensive player. They have Jason Demers there who can add the offense.
The St. Louis Blues beat the Vancouver Canucks last Saturday by a score of 3-2. The Blues had extra motivation as the Vancouver Province newspaper declared that, and I quote, it was time to abuse the Blues and it was a perfect opportunity to smack down on a conference rival. Do you think teams actually do find extra motivation when inflammatory headlines are written about an opponent?
Sure do, because they look for any reason for motivation. I can't believe an abuse the Blues line that causes motivation. And that's
terrible
pretty
line.
Innocuous to me.
It's a terrible line. I don't think the word abuse is a very good choice of words. That's my opinion. But I think a lot. We always hear that a lot of teams put headlines in the dressing room, and that does happen.
Clippings.
So exactly, it's extra motivation, and of course they use it.
82 games, you need some motivation.
Yeah.
Final question here on Rapid Fire: when Hockey Canada announced the names of the players who were invited to the Team Canada World Junior Selection Camp, those who play in the CHL had their Canadian Hockey League team listed as well. The four players invited who play in the NCAA did not have their school listed. Is this a case of oversight on the part of Hockey Canada, or an example of Hockey Canada being petty and small?
Before I answer the question, I wouldn't even have known this unless you included that, but that's why we have you, Drew, in addition to being the host of the show.
I'm just a pretty face.
But
I'm also a pretty face, though.
I think this is a case of oversight.
You think this is just innocent?
I have a lot of respect for Hockey Canada, but I'm going to respectfully disagree with you. There's a battle going on there along the borders in terms of NCAA, Major Junior. There always has been stealing players, you know. And this is just another instance of the battle continuing. Let's get your last question in here, Drew.
Border
battle. I want to hear your last question.
Okay, you decided
we're
going to go for the last question? Okay. Viewers who tune into the opening of CBC's Hockey Night in Canada tonight may be a little surprised when they see the debut of an NHL-themed remix/mashup from YouTube sensation DJ Steve Porter. Two-part question. A, have you ever heard of DJ Steve Porter? And B, do you think these gimmicky features actually result in more people watching the broadcast than we're planning to watch anyways?
Okay, maybe we shouldn't have asked it. A, no. B, no.
Okay, hold on. Definitely no and no, because tonight's game, for those who have the Panasonic 3D televisions, it'll be in 3D, so they're not going to notice DJ Steve Porter. The only two DJs that matter to me, Drew, are Co-op and Honeycutt. Next question.
That was the last question.
It's cheers and jeers.
Okay, cheers and jeers then.
Okay, it's time for cheers and jeers.
And jeers.
Start with Ezzy today when cheers and jeers.
Ooh, I actually remembered this time.
Yay!
Okay, you know what? I'm going to cheer Dallas Stars head coach Mark Crawford. Everyone has seen this clip on TSN by now. Mark Crawford was very mad the other night
did he put Gretzky in the shootout?
Richard's still bitter from 12 years ago, ladies and gentlemen.
Sorry. Oh, come on. He's done a great job in Dallas this year. But anyways, Wednesday night, Dallas lost 5-3 to Chicago, and Crawford was very mad. His comments were, you can't miss a call like that at the end of the game. There's no excuse. A guy throws a stick. It's ridiculous.
It was ridiculous.
How do you guys miss that? Because that is the easiest call in the book to make, and blah, 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 and on and on and on. We got it, Tim?
No.
Oh, sorry.
That was Tim stretching.
I thought we had it queued up.
You yawn, you put your hand up.
You know what? I'm gonna cheer Mark Crawford because he was candid and outspoken, and I agreed with him.
Give some background quickly. What happened?
Well, basically, it was Seabrook. Yeah. Brent Seabrook threw a stick, and you know, under the NHL rule book, if a player throws a stick, it should be a penalty shot.
Yeah.
No call was made, even though everyone, including broadcasters, players, coaches, saw it, and he. Basically, you know, went off after the game, and he was right.
Richie, cheer, cheer.
My cheer goes tonight to Marcus Naslin, who's going to have his number honor tonight in Vancouver. One of the all-time great Canucks, and what you remember most about Marcus Naslin is you know, very respectful guy. Is a calm demeanor out there. Him, Bertuzzi and Morrison were one of the great lines of Vancouver Canucks history. The thing I remember most about him is his patented wrist shot.
I'm going to wind up Cheers and Jeers tonight by jeering Don Cherry. Look, I know I might be un-Canadian for doing so, but he, I thought, made a buffoon of himself when he, for some reason, was asked to speak at the mayoral induction of new Toronto Mayor Rob Ford. Don's got a shtick where he rallies against pinko commies and everything along those lines. People who ride bicycles were the ones that really got it stuck in his craw this time. Don, stick to hockey. I don't care about your political leanings. I frankly think you're not. I think your time has passed on Coach's Corner myself. Enough about the politics. You're just beginning to sound like a grumpy old man who's a little bit off his rocker. That's all I can say about that. So, jeering Don Cherry this week on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That's it for the show. We'd like to thank Manitoba Moose General Manager Craig Heisinger for joining us, ESPN's Scott Burnside for joining us, Jeremy Rutherford from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch for joining us. This show will be available on iTunes. Just search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, IllegalCurve.com. Check out www.illegalcurve.com for all the links and stories and everything like that. Michael Remus is the recap of the our desk from the show will be there. As for Tim, special thanks to Tim behind the desk here doing a fabulous job. Until next Saturday morning, for Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, Michael Remus, Tim Debenham, I'm Drew Mindell. First face-off in the NHL is at 7 p.m.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk Saturday morning at 10, exclusively on Sports Radio 1290.